listening to one in a series of presentations from the 2008 High Ed Web Conference in Springfield, Missouri.
Morning. Was everyone in here for the previous presentation, Agile? Well, he set me up great. So if you are, you have all the theory behind what I'm going to be talking about in a little bit more technical detail. So if you weren't, it was a very good presentation, gave some introduction on all of these topics that I'm going to be talking about. But this one is a little more technical, so hopefully maybe it'll give you some ideas to take back and implement yourself. So first off, my name's Brett Bieber. I'm from the University of Nebraska. Yes, that Nebraska that Mizzou played last weekend. Let's not remind me of it. But I don't play for the football team. I work in our communications office, and I do web development, so back-end server stuff. And who here is utilizing test-driven development? We have one, two, three, four. We have four. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce you to my co-presenters out here. If you all just, you know, state your name and your institution. No, I won't ask you, but please. I haven't been doing this very long, so if you have any, you know, insight, you want to provide something, just speak out and let everybody know. So hopefully we all can benefit from your expertise and everyone else's in here. All right, about me. My first web page, 1995. The Wayback Machine has it enshrined, so this will give you a little bit of perspective about me. And it's embarrassing out there, but only I have the URL, so you guys won't be able to find it. But I'm an active developer in the PHP pair community and the pair project. I submit some patches to the W3C HTML validator, and I am the steward for the PHP Savant templating system. So the perspective that I'm going to be coming at you from is the PHP perspective, okay? So some of the examples I'm going to show you are related to PHP, PHP Unit. Individual languages are going to have tools specific for them. If you have, if you're developing in .NET or if you're developing in Java, they're going to be equivalent tools within your specific library, so your specific language. So look for those tools, and if you're looking for any of those, maybe someone here can offer some help to you. All right, the topics I'm going to be talking about: test-driven development, unit testing, web applications, testing with Selenium, and continuous integration and cruise control. So that's what we'll be covering today. The first, test-driven development. It's going to go over pretty quick, but does everybody know who Joel Spolsky is? Some people do, some people don't. He has a blog out there where he writes on software development. He also has a couple of books out. His first one is excellent, and if you're a developer, you can read that. It's got a lot of good insight in it. He has what he calls the Joel test, 12 steps to better code. If you can achieve these, you are programming at a professional level. So does everyone kind of read through these here? And then this quote down here. If you're operating at 10 or lower, you've got serious problems. Most are running at about a 2 or 3. Okay, we won't ask everybody what number they're at, but how many are under 5 maybe? How many are over 5? Excellent, okay. So there's a lot of room for improvement. If you take back some of these things that I'm going to be talking about, you implement them, you're going to get quite a few of these. But we'll walk through and we'll talk about some of them individually as we go through the different aspects. All right, test-driven development. Quick introduction here. The basic concept is you write tests first. You test your application. You write your tests first, write tests that fail. And then you implement the code that makes it pass. It has concept, the roots of this come out of extreme programming, where, you know, two developers are going to be sharing a keyboard. And, you know, I really don't see how that could actually work, you know. Does it work? It does. Most of the programmers that I know, myself included, are probably pretty arrogant, you know, and selfish people. And so sharing is not something they usually do, but maybe it can work. Okay, design by contract, that's another thing. If you write these tests before you actually develop the code, you know what your program is supposed to do. This is the contract between you and your users. You're writing the tests, you specify how your program is supposed to function. The tests are your contract with the users. And as long as the tests pass, the software should work as specified. Another important point here, if a bug comes up, you should write a test which reproduces the bug and then fix the bug. That's all basically the theory, introduction for test-driven development. We're going to move right in on how to write tests, okay? Unit testing, very important concept for test-driven development. What you do, basically, the concept is you take your entire application, you divide it up into individual units, individual pieces of logic that you want to test. All of these little units can combine into one suite, you know? So one suite would have all these many different tests inside it. And the goal is to make sure that you're running these tests quick. Make sure they run quick. Make sure you run them often. It does you no good if you write all these tests and you run them only once a month and find out things are broken. So you make sure you run these all the time or, you know, on a regular basis. Just to give you a basic introduction to this, if you haven't, you know, if you don't know what testing is all about, I'm going to give you a little introduction based on a simple web application that we have at our university. This is called PeopleFinder, our online directory for faculty, staff, and students. You type in a name, it gives you search results. Very simple. Connects to our LDAP directory and gets information back. Ooh, I don't know if we'll be able to see this. Can everyone see it? Kind of tough. If the accessibility people were in here, I would be in trouble. Wow, that really helps. Whatever works best for you guys. Okay, here's a simple test. It's PHP, so it's simple for me, but it does read pretty easily. First, we're going to create a new PeopleFinder object. This is the object that's going to have all of our logic within it. We get a result from the method getExactMatches for Harvey Perlman. That's our chancellor, so I used him as an example. And here's a simple test. If the result that is returned is an array, and the size of the result is 1, and the first record in that, the given name is Harvey, hey, okay, we're good. There's a test. Very simple. If any of those fail, error. Something's wrong. So I can run that. It gives me okay. I know that those three things are, you know, work fine. Very simple, okay? This is what I would consider a homebrew testing environment. You would write a test. You would say, okay, I want it to put out an okay message if something works okay. I want it to put out fail if something fails. Very simple. You have a series of okay, it's good. Any error, there's a problem. There's some drawbacks to using this, though, this sort of homebrew testing. It's only easy to implement for simple checks. You have to write if-else statements for every check. What if you want more than OK or error? OK, only run test B if A is OK. Or I want to expect an error in some cases. I want more helpful error messages, like, the 2 plus 2 function returned 3, but I expected 4. This is where the benefits of a unit testing framework can help you. All of your languages are going to have a framework out there that will give you an environment for testing and will give you a lot of these tests or code that you can reuse and then implement in your own language that you're writing your code in to speed up your testing. For example, this one would be an example using PHP Unit, which is a unit testing environment. And we've converted what we had before. I don't know how many lines it was before. Now we only have like 5 lines. We still do the initialization. We create an object. We get the result. And then we have what we call assertions. We assert something is true. We assert it is false. We assert it equals 1. We assert the text Harvey is equal to what is returned for the given name. Very simple, okay? Unit testing frameworks, they follow from something from called the XUnit or Beck testing framework. And this comes from Kent Beck of Extreme Programming fame. And he wrote an initial testing framework for the Smalltalk language. The concepts of within a unit testing framework, it has test fixtures, test suites, test execution, test assertions, and many, you know, all of these follow the same sort of design pattern. So if you learn one in one language, you can apply it to other languages as well. Okay. Here's a simple test using PHP Unit. Very simple to what we had before, only now I've added error messages that give me a little bit more detail about what's going on. We'll go back here. If I run this, I get dots. They mean that it passed. I stands for incomplete, as in I haven't implemented the test for that method yet. Fairly simple. If something fails, I get a difference. For example, in this one, I expected the string Harv, but I actually got Harvey. I mistyped it intentionally so that it would show you guys, you know, what the differences would be if you're comparing two strings that are returned. Okay, so this is an example of a failed error message. So, does everybody understand what testing, unit testing, kind of the concepts of it? Seems pretty easy, right? Okay, what's wrong? Does anybody know what's wrong with the few examples that I just gave you? Very good. Very good. Anybody else see anything wrong with what I've shown you? Okay. That's good. That's good. Very good. Right. Okay, let's go back to this. Assume I got a failure message, and these are the three error messages that I was returned, okay? An array of results was not returned. The size of the result set is not what was expected. And Harvey was not returned. What does that mean? Do these messages tell you anything about what's wrong? Are we testing the right things at the right level? So let's look at this first one. An array of results was not returned. What could that possibly mean? Someone broke the method's return signature? That could be a problem. The second one, the size of the result set is not what was expected. Let's say it's more. Is there more than one Harvey Perlman? There's a Harvey Jr. now? Or we have a new chancellor? Maybe he's gone. Harvey was not returned. Did he change his name? Did we lose him? You know? So there are lots of problems with this. What was the cause? The LDAP directory was down. The point here is you need to test at very small levels. Test small pieces, not applications. When you're testing for unit testing, you're testing very small pieces, okay? You need to name your tests appropriately. You need to give helpful information. So when something fails, we know where to go looking for what the cause was, okay? Some advice here. Don't test against live data unless you have to. For some examples, there would be web services, a service that you actually don't maintain. In some cases, you may have to do that. But ideally, you're going to use mock objects. You're going to return fake simulated data that makes the application appear that everything is working correctly. Use test databases so you have sample data that you know so that things will work when you're testing the logic of your application. If your tests rely on previous pass or fails, you need to code them appropriately. In our example, if the LDAP connection was down, there's no point in testing how many results we get. There's no point in testing what the name was of what was returned. So what I really want to emphasize is when you do unit testing, you do not want to send your developers down the wrong path trying to debug something where there's something wrong, okay? So just use it with a little bit of caution. Name your tests appropriately. Test at very small levels. And, you know, I think you'll be all right. Okay. Benefits of unit testing. What we've done is we've established a base for what our program is required to do. We can make drastic changes. I know that the program, which is our contract with the user, functions as expected. Very important for refactoring. We ensure that new features don't break expected behavior. We ensure new developers don't break expected behavior. We ensure past developers. We ensure that you don't break expected behavior, right? Who has applications at their university? Who develops web applications at their university? Everybody. Are your applications important? Do you think they're important to you? Would you be comfortable handing off your application to somebody else to maintain? if you have a test suite, you know you're covered with tests, it alleviates some of that. You can hand it off and you can say, okay, this is how you run the test suite. If you modify it, everything has to pass, okay? So it's very important in terms of business continuity, you know, especially if you have students working on something. High rate of turnover, new developers coming in, someone needs to jump into an application, start modifying it or improving it. Write the tests, make sure that the tests pass, you'd be all right. And here's a quote. Even the dumbest developer can break your code. Should we substitute here? Even the smartest developer can break your code. Okay, code coverage and code analysis. Let's talk a little bit about this. Unit tests, if you have them, what you can get from that is code coverage analysis. So yeah, we test it. We test our application. This answers the how much. To what detail are you testing? We have 100% method coverage. Okay, what about decision branches within those methods? What about every little, you know, every line of code, every input, every output? Code coverage analysis can give you metrics based on the coverage of functions and statements and conditions, paths, entry and exit. It gives us confidence in the code that we're using. It gives us confidence in the code we've inherited from someone else, confidence in the code that we're delivering to someone, and confidence in the code we're asking someone else to support for us or to make improvements on. For example, this is a code coverage analysis map. It's very graphical. Each one of these blocks would be a file. Each one of these would be a class within that. And the different colors show you the code coverage, how well you have covered that with your tests. This has a little summary on the side here. This is the code coverage analysis for the cruise control project. We have 84% method coverage, 87%, 85% line coverage, you know. So it gives you a lot of important information. We know that we have 85% of the code behind our application tested that we can verify that it's functioning correctly. Here's an example of a report for this simple application that we have for our directory. It gives us code coverage analysis. In some methods here, we have each class is covered. Okay, what about the methods within that class? What about the lines within that? Within this, we can actually see where we need to write more tests, where we need to improve the coverage of it. Right here, we have 25% of the lines within this People Finder method, so we need to really improve that. We dig deeper into the code coverage analysis. We have this right here. We can see the lines, the actual lines of code that need to be covered with unit tests. So this is red. I write a new test. I run the code coverage analysis. I can see, okay, now I've covered these components. I still have some that I need to work on here. I write another test. In this example, I'm getting a mock object. I'm not connecting to the database. I'm not connecting to the directory. I'm getting a fake object, which is going to allow me to examine this information and run the tests on our logic. And then I cover a couple more lines. We still have a couple more. I think I'm pretty confident in this code now. Run it again. We have a lot better code coverage analysis. And this is a very small project. I've talked to some developers, a friend of mine who worked at Raytheon. They have 3 million lines of code. They have 5 branches going on all at once. They have future development, current development, and then 3 past releases that they're constantly developing in. I mean, it's very important that you have these tests, and you can analyze the code, and you can examine this in detail. Okay, does everyone have that? Got it? Seems pretty simple. So now, when someone says this, we have 100% code coverage, and all the tests pass. Does anybody see anything wrong with this? Does anybody want to comment? Does anybody see anything that might, you know, any flaws in this logic here? Go ahead.
Just because you covered all the paths that the code might have gone through, the code might be doing, any one piece of code could be doing multiple things and you haven't tested all of what it's doing. You just tested maybe one aspect of what it's doing.
That's right. Go ahead. All possible inputs. Very good. Okay. Also, it is possible to write tests that prove incorrect logic. Oh, really? Did you test all input possibilities? It could be infinite. Did you test on the client's machine? There's where the web applications come into point, okay? Your tests run okay on the testing server, but did it work on the director's machine? Okay. Web applications. What about web applications? I just want to go back to this. Oh, man. I went all the way back. One point I wanted to make about that was when someone says something like that, we have 100% test coverage, take that with a grain of salt, okay? There's no way that you can get 100% coverage and be completely confident. You'll never catch all the possible bugs. But you can get close, and you can do some of the best you can, okay? That's what I wanted to get at there. Oh, you've seen all this stuff. Okay, web applications. So we know our code works on the testing server. Web applications have special needs, right? Whenever someone reports a problem, what is the additional information we need to get from them? Okay, what browser are you on? What version? Okay, what OS are you on? All these additional questions, all these different aspects of how something can be rendered on the client machine. There's so many different variables. The server sends the right HTML. What if your designer hides that with JavaScript or CSS? I actually had this problem once. I had everything working correctly, handed off to the designer. He used JavaScript and he hid the button, which would allow you to submit an event within our event system. And I'm going, everything's fine. I don't see what the problem is. These are things we need to be focused on in terms of web applications and testing them. So how can we test in this environment? Do we test the code? Do we then hand it over to a human and have them manually click through everything? This is where we have a solution that's out there now called browser-based testing with Selenium. This is something someone might consider a functional testing for your application. Whereas unit testing is testing your logic on the server, this is actually, you can think of it in terms of macros, automating a browser, going through a sequence of operations, making sure that your application functions correctly. Runs on Windows, Mac OS X, Linux, it's a Java-based system. Browsers, it can test in Internet Explorer, Firefox, Safari, and many others as well. For example, I'll give you a quick introduction on how to do this. You can easily record and playback actions. You can automate your browser, and it can integrate with your global test suite. That is very important for me. If I'm writing a bunch of tests that test the logic, the unit tests on my application, I can integrate additional tests which are going to automate the browser and test the functional testing as well and give me results on that. Here's a screenshot of the IDE. I'm sure you guys have all installed Firefox extensions before. You go to their website, you click on it, it's an IDE which it goes into Firefox and just lets you record actions and then play them back. Here's an example. I don't know if you can see this, but here we have a sequence of operations that I've recorded. I opened an address. I typed Harvey Perlman within the queue search box. I click the submit button. I wait. I verify that the text is present on the return. I click a link. I verify that text is present on there. And then I verify that the email address is there. Simple, okay? But it's very easy to create these simple tests.
Will it recognize the names of these different fields?
No, yes, it will. As it's recording, it automatically recognizes what fields you inputted in and what links you've clicked on. And you can also custom enter these in too. So here's just a larger screenshot of that where I'm having assertions within Selenium are actually called verify. They say verify text present, verify text is present, verify the element is present. They have a lot of different assertions to check. Verify the number of elements and so on and so on. Verify the object is present within the DOM. What you can do, once you have one of these recorded actions, you can export it for your unit testing framework. Here I have selected export for PHP. What it's going to give me is a test which I can integrate within my other code. It gives me the PHP code which I can integrate into my test suite. I can run this. You start up the Selenium server, remote control, which is going to be listening for connections. I run it, I run my test, and I can actually see it. It pops up a browser, it clicks through operations, and then it returns me the results. I've got a video here that I want to show you. If you can see it, it's only 18 seconds long. We may have to play it a couple more times. But what it is this is a screen capture of Selenium running on my machine, testing our event system, going through a sequence of operations. And all these have been automated. There you go. Done. I'll run it again. Okay. We load it up. We test the login. We test creating an event. Everything's okay. Loads up Firefox again. Logs in. Selects a bunch of events, moves them around, does searching, finds a result, adds it to the calendar very quickly. And you can test this in Firefox. You can test the same operations in Internet Explorer or Safari. Very helpful, especially if you want to automate some sort of testing in here. What are you seeing? Are you spying some problems here? There are a lot of problems with some of these tests, you know. In unit testing and functional testing, you want to isolate everything. So you want to, if something fails earlier on in the chain, you don't want it to cancel out everything else. So it's very important to isolate testing. Make sure your tests are isolated. We'll go back to this here. So that gives you a simple introduction. Other use cases for this, how we use it, we log into a system, perform actions, verify results. That's how we test UNL events. Automate accessibility checks. There's a possibility. Has anyone ever used, Cynthia says? Oh, sorry, you submitted it too early. There's 1 minute, you know. Okay. Enter web address, click submit. Check for past automated verification. Wait 1 minute. Start with another address. There's just some ideas of how you can automate some browser actions. Does anybody else have some other examples? Has anybody used Selenium here? Aaron? What do you use it for? Use it for sequences of registration forms. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. And just keep in mind that we're testing everything rendered on the browser. So we're testing the combination of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Also, when something like this fails, it is kind of hard to find out where actually that failed. You know, was it the CSS that failed? Was it the JavaScript? So just keep that in mind. Okay, everyone understand those concepts, right? Seems pretty easy. Here's a quote from a developer. This came across my reader recently. Have a continuous integration solution in place. Really. If you don't, you just burn money by writing tests. I would go so far as to say if you don't have continuous integration, you should stop writing unit tests and do click testing. I somewhat disagree with this guy, but he makes a good point for why continuous integration is important. Does everyone here know what continuous integration is? Has anyone used it? Testimonials? Okay. You love it. All right. Okay. I kind of disagree with that quote. Tests can be the foundation for your continuous integration environment, cart before the horse. They can serve as secondary documentation. There's been some projects where I see their tests, and that actually gives me insight into how the program is supposed to function. And CI, continuous integration, can serve other purposes besides just unit testing. It can build API documentation for you automatically. You can run coding standards tests. And this is a fellow developer. He says continuous integration without unit tests can have benefits. At a minimum, you've defined a one-step build process, and that's a huge benefit. Okay, continuous integration. What is it? Martin Fowler has a lot of information on it. I would recommend this article to everybody to just read if you're interested at all. The idea, if you weren't in the Agile talk previously, developers continuously or more frequently integrate their code, which means that you have a team of developers. You're all contributing the code, and you're contributing, you know, as quickly as possible once you make changes. Each developer is committing changes to the source code repository daily, okay? You're committing your changes. Why would we do this? You ensure that all the developers are working with the latest code, working or not. Other developers need to know immediately if an interface or a method signature has changed. Everyone sees the progress is being made. This is good for managers also. They can see that developers are actually working. This last one, 5 p.m., leaving for the day. Someone drops in 500 lines of code into the repository. It's a pain for all the other developers, and it's a danger to the build. There's a developer on our campus, very active in the PHP community. He's currently working on the namespaces within PHP. And he travels a lot. So he's constantly away from the internet, you know? And he'll come in and he'll drop, like, just like this, 500 lines of code. And everyone else who's developing with this has to understand his whole train of thought that he went through on that 7-hour plane ride, you know, to understand what his thinking was and what his process was. In a continuous integration environment, you're contributing all the time. You can see those changes. You can understand and see what the other people are thinking. Cruise Control is an application which is implements this continuous integration environment. I say framework. Some might not call it a framework, but it's a continuous build or integration process. The overview is you tell this application, how do you build your application? Do you use Ant? Do you use GNU Make? Do you use MS Build? Do you use some other method of building your project or deploying it or testing it? You tell it how, and then you can define dashboard, notification plugins, modules. Okay, notify the developer when they've broken the build. This I think, is very powerful. You commit some code which broke a test. You notify that developer. You broke the system. You need to fix it. And you notify them right away. That's very important. You can send you can have RSS feed. You can send them an IM. You can email them. I'm not going to go into much of the details about how to configure it because it may be specific for your specific build environment that you're working on or your specific language, but there's a lot of helpful documentation out there. This is an example of the dashboard for a project that I have. This gives a breakdown of the builds, how many have passed, how many have failed. In my environment for this one, I have started up our testing machine whenever someone starts working on it. I don't have it running always. I just start it up and then stop it. But you can also have graphs based on unit test coverage, which I don't have in this one. How many unit tests have passed or failed, test code ratio, coding violations. If you're working within a team of developers, it might be a good idea to adopt some sort of coding standards for your language. There's a lot of them out there, and I really think it's going to help. You know, if you have multiple developers contributing code, have everyone work on the same standards so you're all writing code to the same sort of specs and you can expect how things are supposed to be written. This is one where it's a new project. We have all the unit tests written and we have not had a working build yet. We have 125 tests that passed. We have 40 or so that have failed. And once you got this running, we have started working on that, and working through those unit tests and making them pass. Other things which might be helpful is test execution time. Continuous integration can monitor that for you. If you see that your build is taking a huge amount of time longer, maybe you need to rethink, you know, or take a look at what those commits were, what those changes were that affected the build time. Let's go back here to the Joel test. We have these 12 points, okay? And his quote here, 10 or lower and you've got serious problems. Most are running at about a 2 or 3. I was probably running at maybe a 1 or a 2 before I started looking at some of these. So if you're running low, don't worry about it. That's where I think a lot of us start. If you implement a lot of this stuff, using source code management, using unit testing, you can get a lot of these. You can cover a lot of these. Do you use source control? Can you make a build in one step? Do you make daily builds? Do you have a bug database? Do you fix the bugs, write tests before writing new code? Do you have an updated, up-to-date schedule? Do you have a spec? That spec can be tied to those tests that you have written before. The spec can really help help you understand what your program is supposed to do and how it's supposed to do it. And do you have testers? So implementing a lot of this stuff can get you a lot of these towards, you know, on the road towards professional software development. Some empirical evidence. I think I would be, I wouldn't do it justice if I didn't. This is actually a research that was done by a guy in Canada on the effectiveness of test-first or test-driven development. He had students develop software, the same application, and he had them develop it. One, they just went, started writing code, and one, he had them write the test before they wrote the code. It's a small test, and I think there needs to be a lot more work done, but this research paper showed that using the test-first development, it improves the productivity, it gives the developers a better understanding of the requirements, it helps you reduce the scope of the individual tasks, and it reduces debugging and rework effort. I don't think that they found that it actually made it faster for you to develop the applications. It improved the productivity because those programmers weren't at writer's block trying to figure out how is this supposed to be implemented. They understood that already, but it improved in a lot of other ways. I do think there needs to be a lot more research, but this is some research that has been done already. Okay. Thanks. Discussion and questions. Anybody have any questions? I don't know if I can answer them, but I'd be happy to try. Right. Even in the
it seems to me there must be some kind of methodology for working out the balance between that development your testing requirements. You can test well, you know, test out the wazoo if you can, but
right.
You have to deliver. So what do you run into for your environment?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the customers, I don't know, that's probably a bad term. The people that we're dealing with, they don't understand the intricacies of what needs to be, you know, the decisions and the business logic. But when you go through this process as the developers, you can see some of these, give them sort of a forecast. Okay, these are the decisions we're going to need to be made, and then present those. Gives you the developers a lot better understanding of what the program is expected to do, so they can communicate clearly with your clients, you know, or who you're developing the application for, and get the information that you need. So it helps you develop a stronger relationship between those two. Yes?
Specifically, since you do a lot of PHP development, what have you done to isolate yourself? So like almost all web applications have a database back end.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that problem? How do you handle it?
In terms of testing, how do I handle database integration and testing? What I do is I actually take snapshots of the database for data that is secure and I can expect how it is. Before I run the tests on that data, I set up the database, initialize it to that state, and then I run all my tests, and then I go on to the next ones, which may need to set up the database in a different way. But I use test databases and test data. Does that answer the question? I do not have the testing environment connected to the live database at all, so I have a completely separate environment for the continuous integration system, and it just talks to its own database. Right here.
The unit testing frameworks that you mentioned, do most of those also include code coverage analysis tools?
Those are usually separate tools, but they are related. The tool that actually runs your unit tests. Is going to have to build a report or instrument your program to determine which lines of code were actually touched and then provide that to something else. In some cases, I think they may be integrated, but all the ones that I've seen, they're completely separate tools. The testing framework actually gives you a report of the lines that were touched and then something that actually analyzes that and gives you metrics and graphs. That's going to be a separate tool, as far as I know, unless someone else has other experience. But any other questions? Right here. Okay. Um, the question was, C++ would be a compiled language. PHP is interpreted language. And what do you consider actually a build if it's an interpreted language? Is that kind of the question? Right. Mm-hmm. The build processes that I use in PHP usually just package up the code. They may build API documentation and package that in, run through a lint checker, make sure there's no syntax errors, basic steps like that. But yeah, there aren't any real compiled steps or anything that takes a significant amount of time in an interpreted language. But that's basically what my build process is.
I can handle dirty data, missing data. Yeah, that's where, I mean, the logic is all great.
I think the best way is to create mock objects of what you expect, how it should function, the data in the format that you should expect, and then compare the actual results. And some of those, you're going to have to test against those systems. For example, the web service provides syntax or provides XML to you, you're going to have to make sure that it conforms to that same format. You know what you expect, test against that so that immediately you have it in that integration environment so that it's continuously checking it. And if something comes up, like a fix from your vendor comes through and changes that output format, you're going to know about it immediately. That's the only advice I can offer there. Sure. What am I using for PHP build processing? Or I'm in the pair project, which means that I use their build process and their distribution mechanisms. So what that is it actually packages up code, provides a package manifest in there, and allows you to install and upgrade different versions and handles all that for you. So the tools that I'm using are pair, but there's also for PHP, there's Fing. Fing is not GNU make PH, yeah, and there's the project for cruise control is actually called PHP Under Control. I don't know if you've seen that before, but it integrates with cruise control and gives you a lot of those code metrics. Also, PHP Code Sniffer, which is a project within Pear, it actually analyzes your code, makes sure that it follows some standard that you specify, whether it's a Zend standard or it's the Pear coding standards. So there's a couple tools for you. I also have some other resources at the end of this. Mm-hmm. Oh, you've found that there are some problems using Zend and Zend framework and
Zend core.
Okay, right. Now we're kind of getting into some specific PHP questions, but I can answer some of those specific PHP questions afterwards. But is that it? One more minute. What pair projects? Are you talking about? Right now, I'm working on the Pear 2 installer, which is the next version of called Pyrus, which will be in the installer for the next version of Pear. Right now, I'm on the Pear group, and so I actually make decisions within there about how the project, where the project is going, and things like that. But yeah. Yeah. Because it maintains backwards compatibility with PHP 4. It's the Achilles heel of Pear. It works on all the platforms. Ah, good. Okay. Oh. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Thanks.
Presentations from 2008 Hi-Ed Web Conference. Visit hiedweb.org/2008 or sign up for our podcasting feed at hiedweb.org/podcast.xml.